Welcome everybody to Cardano Over Coffee. We got a great show for you today. And remember, you can join us live on X Spaces Monday through Friday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2:30 p.m. UTC.
We got a hot one for you today. Joining us is the team from Palmyra. The Palm Token IDO is starting tomorrow. Make sure that you check out all the details. Check them out on X and join their Discord to find out more information. But stay tuned, because we're about to get into it.
So it's always awesome to be here, actually.
Yeah,
thank you so much for having us.
It's been a hot minute. I'm so happy. You guys have been so generous with your time getting us up here on a number of occasions. So thank you so much for having us again.
It's been a hot minute for you because you keep skipping it.
Get him, Jenny.
Sorry, whoa. Jenny. That's my bad, okay? That's my bad.
Theo just doesn't tell him. That's how that works. So, but let's start out, because you got like the big day is like tomorrow, and actually people can start today. But let's start. We're not going to get into the whole introduction of who you guys are. You've been here enough. There's like three or four podcasts with them on every podcast platform that we have. Just type in Cardano Over Coffee, and usually I think it's titled under Zengate. So we're not going to get into the usual 10 minutes of finding out who you guys are. I want to get right into it. I want to talk about what are real world assets? Why is it important for blockchain and real world assets to come together? What's that going to change? Let's get into the weeds and talk about what you guys are trying to bring the blockchain into Cardano and Ergo, and then we'll talk about the IDO.
Sure, I can touch on that. So I think the first thing to quickly discuss is what is tokenization? And the way I like to define it is tokenization is a digital representation of data, and that data could represent assets, whether those are digital assets or in our case, real-world assets, so things that are actually in the physical, could be anything from commodities, real estate, IP, certifications, credentials. You can also have digital representations of, like I said before, credentials, certifications, and other types of data as well, which play a really important role in the DeFi ecosystems and in the digital asset space. This could be price data, Oracle feeds, and whatnot. And really, that's really what tokenization is in a nutshell. And what we've seen over the years is this narrative around real-world assets and bringing them on-chain. And, why would you want to do that? Well, the answer is you get an unparalleled amount of transparency, traceability, and access. You can open up new markets. You can open up liquidity opportunities and give opportunities to people that never would have had opportunities for. So that's sort of what tokenization is. And real world assets is one application of that we're really focused on. In our case, it's commodities. So if we just do a quick summary of the Palm economy. So the Palm economy is one of the pillars of the broader Palmyra ecosystem. There's three pillars. The first is the Palmyra platform, which is looking to address a $2.5 trillion gap in trade access and trade finance in commodities. In layman's terms, that's basically buyers looking to directly source from producers and vice versa, and those looking for financing opportunities. The second pillar is the Palm economy, which is the native token Palm. It's a utility token that powers the scalability of the platform itself. And one of the main mechanisms is a staking mechanism, which gives access to rewards in the form of rebates, which come from transaction fees actually generated from the first pillar, the platform itself. And the final pillar is the Palm DAO. And this is by far probably the most important aspect, or one of the most important aspects. And this comes from and stems from our belief that the community is literally one of the most important parts of the ecosystem. It provides the opportunity for decentralized lead generation, decentralized business development, and allows the community to participate in the Palmyra ecosystem, to bring leads, to bring producers, to bring buyers, to give access to these new types of markets. And we've seen firsthand community members come on, onboard producers, onboard as buyers, And we believe that this is the future of scaling in a decentralized way. So that's the quick overview. The tagline really is, there's $2.5 trillion worth of trade finance and trade access each year looking to get filled. So we're playing in an enormous market. And we're really excited to be one of the pioneers in the RWA, the real world asset space, and being able to bring on-chain solutions to producers all around the world. And we started off in Sri Lanka. We're now in Nepal, Indonesia, India, and looking to work with producers out of East Africa as well. So we are strong advocates of opportunity inclusion, empowering producers, empowering buyers all around the world, and empowering community members to participate in this movement. So that's really the overview, and I hope I kept that nice and tight.
Absolutely. You did a better job than Dan would have. Sorry, Dan. Shout out to Sam. No comment? Man, I thought I'd get something there.
Don't encourage him. I just didn't have time to turn on my mic. Don't encourage him.
So you touched on like three things that I kind of want to concentrate on. That was producers, buyers, and then the community, right? Can you explain to me what Palmyra and the Palm economy does for these producers? And you could use the Sri Lanka tea producers as maybe an example, or even the honey, which I like honey. I need to get me some honey off Palmyra.
Dan, do you want to take this one? And since we just mentioned honey, I just want to give a big shout out to KB, which is down there at the audience. We actually have one of the Palmyra pioneers here in the audience as a community member. Dan?
Yeah, sure. Essentially the Palm economy is the financial bedrock of the Palmyra ecosystem. So that's how that's basically how it functions. So what does it do for the producers? Well, of course, the Palm economy is what powers the Oracle network, which is essential in on-off-chain validation and basically providing traceability, being able to provide proof of reserve, being able to digitize them, right? So they would have this value chain that we were talking about before, this data representation of their commodity on-chain, giving them access, because aside from just customers looking for more transparency in what they are, what they're buying and what they're getting, or buyers looking for more transparency and just clarity about, yes, this is real Zambian honey. Yes, this is real Ceylon tea. Yes, it did come from this producer. Aside from this, they're future-proofing themselves against losing market share because regulation. Like, for example, the coming FDA regulations that actually mandate traceability. So, that's just one of the big things that the Palm economy does for them. On the other side, the Palm economy is designed in a way, and what Sam mentioned was the rebate system, where a staker would receive rebates from the transaction fees. And so essentially the transaction fees partially are converted into Palm and put back into the Palm economy through capital infusion. Now, if you're a producer, this is actually a great way for you to offset your transaction fees, because that's what that's the cost that you're going to pay to utilize the platform. And this is, like I said, this is just some of the things that the Palm economy does for the producers. Of course, they can participate in the decentralized business development treasury and open up new markets, because there are a lot of entrepreneurial producers out there that, yes, they're producers, but they also say, you know what, I got a connection in this industry, or I got an in into this other place where you might be interested in. So they can also participate in this. So we encourage this. We created this ecosystem so that the producers, as well as the rest of the participants in the Palm economy, can really benefit from what's there.
Yeah, so the producers definitely sounds like that they're going to benefit from the Palm economy. What about the buyers? How are the buyers, or how can the buyers take advantage of the Palm economy? And then also, how can the community? I think you talked about the rebates, which I think is a big one, but maybe you could talk about that and try to kind of blend those together.
Yeah, of course. So the staking mechanism and a big part of the utility of the token is to really scale the platform. And so, of course, if you are, if you're a hero and you are not necessarily running a business that buys on the platform and not necessarily are a producer of commodities on the platform, you can still involve yourself in the ecosystem. Like I said, first of all, by staking, which helps scale the platform. You can also involve yourself by participating in the business development, as many community members have, and expanding the Palm economy and the Palmyra ecosystem. So this is something that anybody can do. This doesn't just have to be a certain sect of people. Now, moving to the buyer side, from the buyer side, look, it's all about access. Once again, it's about access to real products that you can verify, that you can be sure that you're getting, because this is actually something that's a big issue. For example, when we were there at the World Tea Expo last year, and we were talking about how we have access to this single source Ceylon tea, and we can get it to them, and we have all these varieties of it. People are like, well, wait a second, wow, that's great. It's not easy to get Ceylon tea like that. So it's about access. It's about what they can do with the platform and how they can actually utilize the platform to scale their business, which is very access. Essential. Now,
access is the key word there, Daniel, I think. Yeah,
exactly. We got our friends, our my friends from the Palm economy, wanting to add to that maybe.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan. I just wanted to touch on the community side of things a little bit, just to make it hopefully the message a little bit more clear. We've been thinking about it a lot for quite a while now, and one of the things that we've obviously noticed, the difference between a Web 2 and a Web 3 project or company or application is the power of the community. In Web 2, you cannot find a community. You will see a fan base, and that's about it. But what we've seen now in Web 3 over the last years is that the community can actually play a huge role into this decentralized space. And what better to do in creating incentives for everybody from the community, for all the Palm token holders, to actually scale the platform and bring more business in it, and at the same time have the right incentives to do so. The other thing that I wanted to just note here is that, you know, in order for somebody from the community to, you know, be active and participate on a project or, you know, on the things that they're doing, you have to, most of the times, have some technical skills. The beauty with the Palm economy and for people that would like to participate is that you don't really need to have anything like that, or you don't need to run any infrastructure as well. So it's something that, you know, it's very easy for anybody to participate. All you got to do is know some people and be, you know, be active and be willing to, you know, provide those people solutions, and at the same time have the right incentives to do so. So I think when this Palm DAO is going to roll out, I think we're going to see a very huge, massive scale into the regions and commodities that we are. And I just can't wait to see that happening and see the community saying, hey, you know, I have a friend, he has a farm. He would like to, you know, have global market access. He would like to have better finance solutions and tools. How can he onboard? So it's simple as that, really. And so, yes, I think it's a very, very, you know, good way to incentivize people from the community that, you know, most of the times can come on Twitter and engage with tweets and whatnot. But now we're going to see people actually, you know, without any technical skills to be able to provide value and scale the project in general.
You talk more than Dan. Sorry, Chris. All great information. Amazing.
Oh, he didn't find it funny. That's funny.
I know. I know.
That was like, he doesn't top me though, Hero. So there's that.
I'm getting an angry DM right now on my other account that I can't see. I guarantee it. Archangel Bob, my friend, I hope you're well. Please ask your question.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Hi, Jenny. Rock talk, everybody. Daniel, I wanted to ask, I've been catching a couple of your interviews, you know, like I saw the one yesterday on Dapp Central. And to me, what you're describing really implies, you know, some more traditional corporate structure just to get out there and integrate with these food producers or commodity producers, the people who are making the real world assets. And I was wondering, how is that structured? How is that happening?
Sam, do you want to take this one? Because I think Dan has...
But he's coming back.
He's coming back up.
Yeah, sure.
Or at least trying to.
So, on the Palmyra platform side, we recently had a... on the mainstream podcast, we had someone from the community, Yoram, who's one of the co-founders of Andamio. And he's done extensive work with different NGOs and, you know, institutions such as the Earthworm Foundation. And so he covers a lot of it on that podcast. So I suggest everyone to go have a look at it. But really, the way he described it, which is very aligned with our strategy, is trust, right? Like I still think, for everyone that's come into the blockchain space, many of us are here because there's a lack of trust in systems, in society, in the way our monetary sort of systems work all around the world, whether that's access to goods, access to services. And that's is the big driver. And really what we're trying to do is build and bridge trust. So being on the ground, building the relationships, bridging trust is really something that you have to actually do in person. You have to have people there. You have to have advocates. You have to have the right local partners. It's not just about technology. So like you mentioned before, like anyone can build on-chain solutions. Anyone can build technology, but you need to actually go on the ground, speak to people and understand, is what you're actually delivering yield commercial benefits for these people? And we spent a lot of time actually doing that before building anything. And we've run a series of different workshops out of Sri Lanka. I think collectively we've been there 3 or 4 or 5 times already over the last year and a half to speak with producers, to speak with regulators. And we've done the same thing on the buyer side as well. We've gone and spoken to customers and basically have just said in a non-dogmatic, you know, approach, like, what do you need? And it's been a very interesting sort of process to have to go through that and then come to the conclusion that, yes, we need to use ETXO blockchains because it's the best architecture to do state changes and track and trace commodities across the supply chain. Like, yes, we need to use on-chain credentials. Yes, we need to use, you know, verified data instead of over-reliance on certifications from, you know, different bodies. So, like, that the approach has really just been first principles-based, and this is what I think all projects should be doing. Like, go speak to your customers first. And the direct result has been building a matching platform. And we're hearing a lot of interest of people that want access to finance. So the next thing that needs to ultimately happen is how do you get DeFi involved? How can you build a trade DeFi platform to actually enable financing of these transactions to the producers in a way that is capital efficient, but also makes sense commercially? So we've always had that approach. And the Web3 component has been the best solution, we believe, going forward in terms of the technology. But ultimately, as Chef mentioned, the community drives scale and growth and allows people to actually participate in something that they never would have been able to. And the direct result is producers benefit and more value flows back to them. And at the end of the day, when more value flows back to the producers, their communities benefit, their families benefit. And they get the, you know, have a bigger impact in their sort of in their life. So that's been a key drive in terms of why we do stuff, and also the approach in terms of how we do it.
You know, I totally agree with you. I mean, we're in alignment on that. But I, you know, it's a big planet, and there's a lot of people out there, and that's kind of the how you get the people on the ground to talk to the producers. You know, like it's you know, it's kind of a mind-boggling concept, because they can be anywhere, right? And that's kind of what I was wondering. I've known you, Orm, for I don't know, 2 or 3 years now, so I understand and appreciate the work that he does there. I guess you brought up Yoram, and I know his connections to the people in the African community, and Sri Lanka is another area. I'm going to assume that you guys are just working with the people that you know wherever they are, and those are some of the people that we in the Cardano community are aware of as well. I thought maybe you might have been building a network of people who, you know, are used to dealing with producers on the ground, but maybe outside of the Cardano ecosystem. I didn't know if you were trying to build that up outside of the Cardano ecosystem as it exists now. So that's just kind of what I was curious about.
Yeah, and the approach is twofold, right? Like we can't rely on everything and all the answers to come out of the Cardano ecosystem. We're quite proactive, right, in terms of speaking to networks, associations that, well, to be honest, most of the conversations that we've had are actually people completely unrelated to blockchain. These are people that are just looking for solutions, and they're the ones that we've gone to directly. But the belief that the Cardano ecosystem has a tremendous amount of value to drive and to onboard onto a platform is still there, and we believe that that's the path forward to scale.
Yeah, I agree. 6 degrees of separation, right? Far to touch everybody in the world.
I love the birds in the background. Well, thanks, I appreciate it. Very relaxing.
I broke as soon as we're talking on our, so that's great.
Excellent, KB. I think you have some words that you want to spit out, my friend.
Yeah, I would say the reason that Palm works for us as a honey producer in Zambia. We work with 3,000 small-scale beekeepers with 30,000 beehives. And we have traceability in a platform sense that we've had to kind of custom build. Where was that value going? You know, why did we want that value? That was our values. Like, those were our first principles. So we wanted to make sure that whatever we would state, we could prove. This now just shows. It just shows it. It's that verification over certification. It very much comes back to, yeah, Scott Poynton with his book and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But for buyers and for us as a company, we're working with like a marketing and distribution consultant that's helping us figure out our strategy for the States for all this honey we have. And with that, we can now, with Palm, set ourselves up in the same way as all wholesalers do for bulk and raw honey in the States. We can set up our infrastructure, and it theoretically will flow all through Palm. So we'll get more money. Buyers will get better deals. We can sell from drums to buckets to jars, branded or unbranded. Like, it's an out-of-the-box business operations and fulfillment and traceability, and it's crazy the things that are getting built and like are working, will work, you know.
I think you would know kind of firsthand a little bit more than most. I know that we have Pyro always talks about it too, and the solution. So, Arbiter, you have your hand up. You have a question before we... I want to get into the audio then, because we only have a few minutes left with this guest.
Yeah, I have a question. Sorry, Sammy, I'm stalking you all over the place. I was with the guys in the previous
space.
I... Yeah, there's another question I wanted to ask, and I couldn't make it. I'm wondering from the producer perspective or buyer perspective. Okay, so I'm guessing they're of course Web2 people. So it's mostly again commodity producers and buyers, and from the user experience perspective, will they be aware that actually interacting with blockchain technology, and if so, to what extent would they be informed about the technology behind the scenes? Like, at what point would they be or wouldn't they be? I'm just curious about what the interaction mechanism is going to be, and yeah, that would be the question.
Yeah, you know, I'll take that one, because really this is a very kind of intricate part of our design. If they don't want to, they don't have to be. In fact, pretty much the entire Web3 quote-unquote experience is abstracted. We don't have to teach people how to set up wallets. We don't have to teach people how to transact in crypto, how it's getting tokenized. Because look, you don't need to. There is no reason for the average user to get into these details from what they're trying to achieve with Palmyra, which is like what we said, is access to a wider market. All they need to know is that this provides them access to a wider market. Yes, this provides them transparency that they can immutably prove and utilize to gain more customers, and then on the other side, on the buyer side, to get the real deal, to get real commodities that are difficult to come by if you're not utilizing these systems. So yeah, to answer your question, pretty much all of it is abstracted. We will eventually have some Web3 experience. Like, for example, Trade DeFi is going to have, of course, some DeFi components. That will be more of a kind of a, you know, it'll show its Web3 side. But as of right now, tokenization happens under the hood. All of this happens under the hood. All the NFTs that actually represent these commodities happen under the hood. And that is by design. That is a feature, not a bug.
And one more thing to follow up, and hopefully that will answer the question a little bit more. Feel free to now go to palmyra.app, and you can actually browse the platform, see the UI for yourself. Everything that you will see, it's what the producers or the buyers of the platform see. And we wanted to make sure that the experience that people have, you know, is, if you will, a mix of, you know, the Amazon experience, the eBay experience, the Airbnb experience, all combined in a way that people won't have to know or understand anything around blockchain and how the technology works.
So basically, when you market the product on the Web2 side, you're not going to market the Web3 aspect of it. Basically,
there is no blockchain words or NFTs or anything like that, because again, they don't need to know about it.
It's understandable.
I think that's a great approach. One of the things that when I got into crypto was always people will use blockchain and they won't even know that they're using blockchain. I need to, if there's anybody out from Ascent Rivals here, please request a speaker. Until I get that request, I'm going to just continue to move on here.
Yeah, I'm from Ascent. Okay. I was just listening and so.
Just to hang out for a couple moments till I finish this up. I'm sorry, I got lots of hands up, so apologize. Graybeard, please, if we can try to just pick the pace up, because I still want to mention their IDO that's coming up and how you can get involved.
Certainly. Among other things, I'm a farmer, and in the South Bronx, there's a farmer's market that all the watermelons and everything comes through to get into New York City. It sounds like that you're exactly like that farmer's market, except in a more of a digital world. My question for you as a farmer, as a producer, what percentage of the farmer's markup do you take?
Sure, I can answer that one. So it'll depend commodity to commodity, but really what we're doing, just so you understand like the cost economics, is we're enabling direct sourcing in a global market. And that at times can save a ridiculous amount of money. And in our first transactions that we had on the platform side, we were able to increase the revenues on the producer side by upwards of 50 to 70%. While saving the buyer 30% as well. And the transaction fee that we charge on the producer side was 5%, which is well below what, most sort of middlemen would take. And we're talking about markets where there's multiple intermediaries that support these supply chains that are always putting margins on top as well. So we're enabling a direct access. And if we're able to capture more value to the producers, we take a small portion of that.
Yeah, 5% is well below, and I congratulate you on that. Looking out, follow up question: do you guys on your project use any artificial intelligence, and are you looking at it to help the farmers? And if you are, I invite you to deepfunding.ai, which is a grant program you might be able to take advantage of to help farmers.
Yeah, so definitely on the matching side, there's some AI elements there that we'll ultimately have to look into. But on the compliance front, the capturing of data, I think there's a lot of data that we collect that we can utilize. But right now, the core focus is to create the most amount of value through enabling direct sourcing and then starting to work on the on-chain credentials and on-chain traceability elements, because this is the solutions that people are asking for today. But once those systems are in place, for sure, I think there's opportunities there to utilize some of these new technologies.
Archangel Bob, you got to make it quick, bro.
So, I'm hearing a lot about farm products, right? And these things have a shelf life. And so in that situation, I understand why the technology undergirding all of this doesn't necessarily have to be a concern of the farmer. But there's a lot of commodities that don't have a shelf life. And if their real world assets are tokenized, then they kind of do have to get educated about the technology, because they're holding tokenized representations of the work that they've put out, and they may want to, shop it, hold on to it, understand how to leverage it. And that does kind of imply some, a learning curve for them, doesn't it?
I think in my view, that's very similar to like warehouse receipting, which is, a pretty common practice in commodity trading.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Maybe you can reiterate your question, if you don't mind, once again, so Sam or Dan can pick it up, because I can see that they didn't pick it up. So yeah, I think they cannot hear for some reason. I think the Twitter space is laggy. So if you don't mind, just...
No, it's all right. Oh, I understood.
You got it? So, okay.
Yeah, well, I think Kyle explained it really well. So when it comes to like no shelf life or let's just call it less perishable commodities, this becomes really important. So if you don't have warehouses, effectively when farmers harvest their products, they're forced to sell. If they don't have a way to store the products, they're forced to sell it upon harvest. So warehouses play a really important role in economies and soft commodities and other types of commodities as well, which allow sort of licensed warehouse operators to store these products. And this is where things like proof of reserves, which is stuff like Chainlink has been working on, becomes really important, because you can have an open ledger which tracks what goes in, what goes out. You can on-chain, create digital receipts. And these can be receipts which can be used to borrow money. It can be used to trade the asset. And it allows the farmers and producers and the commodity owners to store value. And oracles will play an important role. So you can actually show, maybe it's an IoT device that tracks temperature. Maybe it has a sensor built into it, or a camera even. So you can see that it's actually in the warehouse.
And the RWA is actually physically backed by something in the warehouse. So this opens up enormous opportunities in the DeFi that hasn't really been experimented on before. So this is really the opportunity that we're looking at right now.
So I need to, I'm sorry for the people that have their hands up and other questions, but I'm going to be jumping in here and cutting this off. We have another guest and I need to be respectful of their time. If you have any questions, follow Palm Economy, jump in their Discord. I'm a lurker in there. They're active. They will answer your questions. Blockjock wanted to know about the IDO. So if, Chef, if you could give us a rundown of the IDO that's starting tomorrow. I can't reiterate that real world assets, two things that I've gaming is one thing that blockchain needs and real world assets and also decentralized infrastructure, but that's another thing. But this is something that you should pay attention to. Even if you can't get in the IDO, there is the ISPO going on Cardano, Palm One and Palm Two. Palm One's 100%, Palm Two you get 50% Palm and 50% ADA. So you could check that out. But if you can't participate in IDO, Chef, give me the rundown on the IDO and how that goes down.
Yes, of course. First of all, I just wanted to thank everybody for your questions. I think they were all very, very valuable. And I would just like to invite everybody that has more questions, that most likely you will, feel free to join our Discord and we can keep the conversation going. Now, around the IDO, that's a very, very exciting time for us. We've been planning about this for quite a while now. We have partnered with T-1, which is the launchpad that we're going to be using. There's going to be the IDO starts tomorrow, and there's three different steps, if you will, within the IDO round. The first step is the RSERG IDO. It starts tomorrow, April 18th at 9 a.m. UTC. And that step, if you will, that round is essentially for, a big thank you for the Ergo community for all the support that they've been giving us for the past 2 years. And obviously, we would like to also start utilizing Rosenbridge for the first time on an IDO. So people can come in, can go to T-1 and, use their RSERG to reserve some of the Palm tokens. Also, we have two more dates that are coming up, which is on the April 21st. And we're going to have like an early access NFT round. It's for all those people that have been participating on the ISPO. They got more than 1,000 people got a Palm OG NFT airdropped into their wallets. And with that, they can go to T-1. And at that time on April 21st, 12 a.m. UTC, and they can get in and claim their, reserve their Palm tokens. And the biggest round, which is the quote unquote open round for the Cardano community, that everybody can get in there and use their ADA to reserve some of the Palm tokens. And that starts on April 21st at 12 p.m. UTC. In the meantime, for all those days, for all the next few days, we will be having many, many spaces in like different time zones, so we can make sure that we can capture all the audience and make sure that we give as much information as we can to everybody and hopefully educate everyone around the Palm economy, the RWAs, the mission that we have, and hopefully they can join our community.
And there's so much going on with the IDO, and I encourage everybody to do your own research. Go in, read. Their documentation is amazing, so shout out to you guys. I've been looking. I want to buy some tea. Like I need to buy some of that tea.
You keep talking about that tea. I'm tired. I don't want to hear about it until I have a bag in my hand.
If I order some, I will send it to you. I promise you.
Send us an address. We'll sort you out.
So first of all, Jenny, feel free to DM me your address, and I will send you some tea personally. So that's a promise that I'm making to you right now. The only thing that I just wanted to add regarding the IDO is that people can actually go and KYC now before the IDO starts. So feel free to go to T-1 website so you can KYC, be ready. So when the time comes, you can just do a couple of clicks and hopefully you'll be good to go. So yeah, make sure you go and do the KYC beforehand. That way you won't have to rush yourself for when the time comes and you'll be a couple clicks away.
Very easy to use, by the way.
Thanks everyone for listening to Cardano Over Coffee, and we're really looking forward to what the Palm economy can bring to Cardano. We want to give a big shout out to our monthly podcast supporters, The Wizard Tim, Discover Cardano, Book.io, Project Camo, Linda from Stakepool Ticker, MALU, Twisted Gears, Mihan, Enigma Stakepool Ticker 1, Monster Stakepool Ticker, MNSTR, Epoch Sect, and Psychos, the Cardano card game. We appreciate all your support. If you'd like to have your name or business mentioned in future podcasts or have your logo and links displayed in the description of our podcast, click the support button now.